The story of Joseph in the book of Genesis is filled with injustice. He was sold into slavery by his brothers. He was falsely accused by his boss's wife. He was wrongfully persecuted in a dungeon in Egypt. And yet his reaction to these circumstances was very different from what we might expect. Today on Truth for Life, Alistair Begg presents four ways we can approach unjust suffering.
What do we need to note here about unjust suffering and the response of a person to unjust suffering? The first thing is this: do not be surprised when you suffer unjustly. Many people are living with the mistaken notion that all will be well now that I have made my commitment or I have endeavored to follow after Jesus. Because after all, we've said to ourselves, there is that Romans 8:28 verse, in all things God works for the good of those who love him. And we have made that equal our benefit and our blessing and our health and our security and our freedom and everything else, frankly, we want it to be. We've made the whole package and put it all together in a bundle. And so anybody who is living with that notion of what it means to be a Christian is going to be surprised by unjust suffering. Where did we get the idea? Where did we get a Christianity where Jesus does all the dying? Where did we get a Christianity where Jesus is the only one that bears a cross? A Christianity where Jesus is the only one who wears a crown? I tell you what, we didn't get it in the New Testament. And let me tell you, I'm not a prophet, nor am I the son of a prophet, but I'm going to tell you why we better pay attention to this in this country. If you take the environment in which Paul was functioning in the Roman Empire, you know enough about it to understand this, that in the Roman Empire, you had a pluralist culture. Now, don't let's get confused by the word. Pluralism is the theory that the ultimate reality of the universe, I'm quoting from my own notes now, consists of a plurality of entities. Okay? Pluralism says that truth cannot be and is not in one dogma or in one person or in one entity. Pluralism says it is in multiple entities. Syncretism advances that and says it is in the blending of all of these entities that we come to a discovery of the truth. And in that mindset, there's always room for another God. And so there was in Roman culture. They had the pantheon, which was just a big variety of gods. A very open culture, very willing to think expansively, very prepared for all kinds of religions. So isn't it kind of strange that they threw the Christians to the lions? How could it be that in such a pluralistic, open, pantheistic culture, you would have such unjustified suffering meted out on Christians? The Roman culture could not and would not tolerate Christianity because Christians were not prepared to add Christ to the pantheon. Christians must inevitably say that there is no other name under heaven given among men whereby people are saved, save the name of Jesus of Nazareth, Acts chapter 4. You see, we do not press upon our loved ones and our friends Christianity on the basis of its pragmatic benefits. We press and are pressed by the fact of its evidential truthfulness. And if we, in a pluralistic culture, are going to be prepared to stand for these things, believe me, we better get ready not to be surprised at the painful trial that comes upon us. Because pluralists can only tolerate pluralists. They cannot tolerate. Indeed, they are mercilessly intolerant towards those who refuse to subscribe to their agnostic and universal views. And if you doubt that, go on a university campus. If you doubt that, go on a high school campus. If you doubt that, say it straight in your office or in your factory. And your people will be with you right up until the point that the penny drops and they understand that what you're saying is, Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, and nobody comes to the Father except through him. And that phrase, except through him, is anathema in a pluralistic world, whether it is the culture of Rome or the culture of Cleveland. Secondly, don't throw in the towel. Don't throw in the towel. Joseph, in viewing his circumstances, had every reason, humanly speaking, to say, you know, I think I'll give up. I might as well do what everyone else does. I don't see that this is working to my benefit. I try to do the right thing for my father, I get thrown in a pit. I try and be nice to my brothers and go and check on them, and they strap me to the back of some mangy camel and ship me off into Egypt. I try and do the right thing there, and I get thrown in the jail because of some perverse woman. I really don't deserve this. I might as well give it a miss. You ever succumb to that temptation? You feel like that? You know, I really don't need to keep this up. I don't think that anybody pays attention to it in any case. I don't see that I need to keep purity in my marriage. I don't think that I need integrity in my tax returns. I don't think that there's any benefit in this at all. After all these rascals around me here, they're doing it all wrong and they're having a great time. I'm doing it all right and it's the pits. Says F.B. Meyer, do right because it is right to do right. And when you determine to do right because it is right to do right, then when you're misunderstood, ill-treated, when you are the victim of unjust suffering, you won't swerve, you won't sit down, you won't whine, and you won't despair. And you see, that's the wonderful thing about Joseph. How is it that he is so absent whining? Sure, he'd like to get out. He makes a request to do so. But he's not a whiner. He's not a moaner and a groaner or a complainer. Because he determined to do the right thing. And he said, you know what? I'm going to do the right thing no matter what it costs. No matter where it puts me, do right because it is right to do right. And back in Hebrews chapter 12, as the writer encourages those who were tempted to throw in the towel, tempted to chuck it, he says, listen, let me tell you what the antidote is. The antidote to faint-heartedness and to weariness. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. You having a bad day, he says? Think of Jesus. The people maligning you? Think of Christ. You feeling like throwing in the towel, giving it up, losing heart, chucking it? Consider Jesus. After all, verse 4, in your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. You haven't died yet, he says. Could get much worse than it is. What do I do when I face unjust suffering? First of all, don't be surprised. Secondly, don't throw in the towel. Thirdly, don't take revenge. Don't take revenge. This is the most litigated society in the world. There are more lawsuits here in these fair shores than any other place in the whole world. This is no time to make comments about attorneys. They always get rather tense. You know my story about the attorney called Odd, Mr. Odd? And all the way through his life, he got people call him Oddball and Odds and Sods and Odds and Ends and everything on the phone. So eventually he determined that he would not have his name on his tombstone because he had been so plagued by it in his life, he didn't want to be plagued by it in his death. So he left instructions in his will that he should have an inscription on his tombstone that simply read, "Here lies an honest lawyer." And people used to walk through and look at it and say, "That's odd." That was just lighthearted repartee. It's not a comment on the legal profession. But one of the reasons that the society is so litigated is because people are so vengeful. People are saying, "I'll get you. I'll get you in the end. Yes, I will. I'll get you in the end. Oh, yeah." And that's not a love song they're singing. Romans chapter 12 and verse 19 gives the instruction with absolute clarity. You're in the face of unjust suffering. What should you do about it? Well, he says, verse 17, don't repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everybody. If it's possible, as far as it depends upon you, live at peace with everyone. And then look at this. Do not take revenge, my friends, but leave room for God's wrath, for it is written, it's mine to avenge, I will repay, says the Lord. On the contrary, how about this? If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. In the everyday events of life, one of my children came home and was deeply upset and offended by something that had happened in the school, to the point of tears and heartache and some triviality that loomed larger than Mount Iger. And the reaction was, well, I think, one, I'll never speak to them again, or two, if I do, I'll just give them a piece of my mind real good, because I've thought of some good replies to this. And so we sat, and I said, you know, let me tell you what to do here. Write a note that simply says, I'm sorry about what happened yesterday. I forgive you. You're my friend. Then sign your name. No way! You weren't there. You didn't hear it. You should have heard it. You should have seen it. Honey, go your way if you want. That's my suggestion. Following day, I get a call at the office. Hello? Hey. Uh-huh. I did it. What? I've already forgotten now. I took the note. And what happened? Well, I was in the bathroom. And my friends came in. And they were crying. And they said, we're sorry. And I said, what do you do? He said, well, we just hugged each other and just cried for a bit. And then it was fantastic. He said, you were right, Dad. Now, all of our disputes are just grown-up versions of things that happen in children's bathrooms. When you cut to the heart of it, it's all an extension of he said, she said stuff. Marital breakdown is all about that as well. Do you know how much can be cured and prevented by paying attention to this in the face of unjust suffering? Instead of responding a la Cosmopolitan magazine, instead of responding a la the mind of the world, respond a la the New Testament. But I shouldn't deserve this. We know. But I didn't do that. We know. But I shouldn't even be here. I shouldn't have been there. We know. Why don't you send them a present? Don't be crazy. When Jesus was reviled, he didn't revile in return. When he suffered, he didn't curse them or threaten them. You find the same thing all the way through the Bible. Nehemiah in chapter 6 is trying to do a fairly decent job building the wall with God's help. They got opposition from outside, opposition from inside, opposition from inside, outside, backside, front side. Everybody's tearing him apart. Now he's the leader. First of all, he's a hero. The next minute, he's a bum. The first year, they idolize you. The second year, they criticize you. The third year, they ostracize you. And it was all happening within the space of months for Nehemiah. And they send him a letter, an open letter, an unsigned letter, an anonymous letter with multiple exposure. The worst kind. Incidentally, you know what I do with anonymous letters? Pitch them. That's my advice to you. Don't pay one bit of attention to a letter that someone won't sign their name to. I don't care if it's positive or negative. If it's positive and you won't tell me who you are, you're scaring me. And if it's negative and you don't tell me who you are, I ain't got no respect for you. The famous preacher in London at the time of Spurgeon, who was on the receiving end of anonymous letters. And as he was walking up into the pulpit, someone threw him a letter. And he opened it. It was a half-folded sheet. He opened it and it simply said, fool. And he said to the congregation, he said, I'm used to receiving these letters. There is usually a greeting without a signature. In this case, I have the signature without the greeting. So what does Nehemiah do? He writes, he says to the guys, he says, listen, nothing like what you say is happening. You're just making it up out of your heads. It's the response of a clear conscience. It's the same thing that you have by Paul in 1 Corinthians 4. They're saying all these things about Paul and why he's doing what he's doing. He says, listen, I don't care if I'm judged by you or by any human court. My conscience is clear. That doesn't make me innocent. But it doesn't mean that I can sleep at night in the awareness of the fact that one day I'm going to be judged by God. And the thought of being judged by God is a far more significant judgment than what Mr. X or Mrs. X has to say about me. John Knox had it perfectly. John Knox, it was said of Knox in St. Giles Cathedral in Edinburgh that he feared the face of God so much that he never feared the face of any man, which was good because they used to throw stuff at Knox when he was preaching. Stools and bits of merchandise and everything. So he just, you know, like as it says in 2 Corinthians 11, as said, if you take your Bibles and turn to... It's a great, great mistake to spend our lives trying to clear ourselves, trying to justify ourselves, trying to explain our motives and explain this and explain that and get all the scrambled eggs back up into the shells and put them all in a nice form all over again. Forget it. Justice will be served. Do not spend your life trying to clear your name. It is a wiser course of action to keep on with the task at hand, to trust God to vindicate in due course. That may be days, weeks, months, years, and maybe not until we get to heaven. But that'll be fine. Last thing, when you face unjust suffering, what do we say? I don't know, I need to look. Number one, don't be surprised. Number two, don't throw in the towel. Number three, don't take revenge. And finally, number four, don't miss the chance to help others. When you're on the receiving end of unjust suffering, don't miss the chance to help others. Isn't that the wonderful thing that we find here in Genesis 40 and to which we will return? The interest and the sensitivity of Joseph. Did he have a big problem? Certainly. Did he have a reason for a grudge? Without question. Could he have spent all of his life consumed with his own little problems? Absolutely. But what does he do? Verse 6, he notices that these two men are dejected. The reason he notices is because he's looking. And the reason he's looking is because he cares. Not only does he notice that they're dejected, but in verse 7, he cares enough to ask them why they're dejected. And as we'll see next time, he reveals the sensitivity of his heart in the worst of circumstances, in caring for others who are on the receiving end of good news and bad news. We might have forgiven him, actually, if he had said, you know, I've got so much trouble here. I know you had a dream. I know you've got a problem. But hey, you know, since the age of 17, and it's been going a decade now, I'm 27 now. I'm sorry. I just don't have time to deal with this stuff. But he didn't. He didn't. Leslie Flynn, a pastor in New Jersey, I believe, wrote a little book on Joseph. And in the course of it, he tells the story of a seminary professor who went into a deep depression. So deep was the depression that he didn't actually care about anyone or anything. He'd been on the receiving end of criticism or something, and everything seemed hopeless. In the course of a visit from a friend, the friend challenged him to think of people in his life who had been a major help to him, and then from that list to select one and to write them a letter expressing his gratitude. The man thought about it for some time, and before his mind's eye came the face of a school teacher that he'd had when he was a small boy. A school teacher who had instilled in him a love of literature, poetry, prose, and reading and everything. And thinking over it, he decided to write her a letter. He wrote her a note telling how she had inspired him with this great love of books. And he received a reply in the shaky handwriting of a lady who had been retired for many years. Dear William, when I read your letter, I was blinded with tears. For I remember you as a little fellow in my class. You have warmed my old heart. I have taught school for 50 years. Yours is the first letter of thanks I received from a student, and I shall cherish it until I die. And a little sliver of light came into the dungeon of this fellow William's life, encouraging him to write another thank you note, and then another one, and another one, and another one, until he had written 500 notes of gratitude and was no longer close to anything that may be described as depression. Why? Because, like Joseph, he finally figured it. There's no reason for surprise. There's no reason to throw in the towel. There's no reason for revenge. And there is no reason to miss the chance to help others. Are you in a bind at the moment? Are you in circumstances that, known only to you and to God, are closing you down like a dungeon? And all the advice that you're getting from all around is fight your way out. Consider Joseph. Consider these principles. And do what's right. Because it's right. Always to do right.
A powerful challenge from Alistair Begg in a message titled Good News, Bad News. This is Truth for Life. Well, today is a busy shopping day for many people, and let me mention something you'll want to consider putting on your list. It's two outstanding documentary films titled American Gospel, and they come packaged together in one collection. These films take a hard look at the differences between biblical Christianity and the increasingly popular faith movements that have taken root in America. From faith healers to the prosperity gospel to the belief that all roads lead to heaven, these American Gospel documentary films explore how our culture has created both a man-made God and a man-centered religion. These films are really extraordinary, and we are thrilled to be able to bring them to you today exclusively from Truth for Life for just $5, and the shipping is free. Again, that's two films, American Gospel, Christ Alone, and American Gospel, Christ Crucified, together for just $5. They come on two DVDs. You'll also find instructions for streaming if you'd prefer to do that. And let me mention, the second film includes an interview with Alistair. Don't miss this exclusive two-film collection. You'll find it today online at truthforlife.org/store, or you can click the image on our app. We love being able to make offers like this available on our website for just a few dollars, but that's only possible because of the generous giving that comes from listeners like you. So we'd ask you to consider adding a generous donation to your purchase today. Keep in mind, every donation makes a difference. Your giving supports this daily program and the free or at-cost teaching from Truth for Life. So again, visit truthforlife.org/store. And when you add a donation to your order of the American Gospel films, we want to invite you to also request a copy of the Advent devotional, Repeat the Sounding Joy, as our way of saying thanks. Now keep in mind, our offices are closed today because of the Thanksgiving holiday. So find us online at truthforlife.org/store, and we hope you have a relaxing and restful weekend. And keep in mind, you're invited to watch Alistair as he teaches from Parkside Church whenever the service is streamed live. To see if Alistair is teaching this weekend, you can check the schedule at truthforlife.org/live. I'm Bob Lapine. Be sure to join us Monday as we continue the series, My Times Are in Your Hands. The Bible teaching of Alistair Begg is furnished by Truth for Life, where the learning is for living.